Wonderful. Well, hello and welcome everyone to our sixth episode of the Classified No More podcast. My name is Briar Welch and I'm your Classified Senate Vice President. The Classified No More podcast was created so that classified professionals could feel more engaged and connected to different areas of College of Marin and to the people in those areas who we might not have the opportunity to connect with regularly. Our hope is to continue to break down walls and connect people instead of roles. We hope you will enjoy today's podcast with the Board of Trustees and our host, Classified Senate President Sally Wong. Thank you so much, trustees, and thank you, Sally.
Good morning, everybody, and thank you so much, Board of Trustees officers, for coming and joining us this morning. We want to jump right in, and we ask this first question of each guest who comes on our podcast to get to know you as an individual and not just your role. So, for starters, could you introduce yourself? Tell us how you want to be. How you want to be addressed if we were to see you know, on campus, and share with us something about you that we wouldn't know by looking at you. So let's start with Trustee Dizzle.
Okay, you can call me Paul. I think that fits with the goal of making this more personal. And I am currently president of the Board of Trustees. Something that you might not know about me is that I'm the son of a war refugee who arrived here almost dead in this country. And that may explain why I have such a strong interest in the well-being of all of the immigrants in our community.
That's it. Well, you were a faculty member for
Oh, that's right. Okay. I was a faculty member
you might
for,
not believe
that's true,
that's
that's true.
true. That's
I
true.
was a faculty member for 23 years before I was elected to the Board of Trustees, teaching biology, environmental science, natural history, and those things. So that's great.
I will go on to Trustee
Trustee Trainer. It can be called Wandine. It's spelled Wandin, pronounced Wandine. It's like a boy named Sue, builds character. I think well, I grew up in Marin. I've been on the board for 30 years. Between college and law school, I was a VISTA volunteer, and I'm very proud of that. And I did self-help housing projects, coordinated them, and also farm worker co-ops. And that was back in the late 70s, way before people were talking about affordable housing, but recognizing since that time that housing is a key element to the success of anyone's livelihood. I think probably one of the things I'm proud of is to have been an out board member. My wife, Faye, and I have been together for 41 years, and I feel fortunate that we've been able to be role models in our community. I'm also probably what you don't know, similar to Paul, is that I'm first generation. My father came to this country from Ireland in his late 20s. And so I know what it's like having all your cousins in another place and kind of being alone in a country, and also know why people come to America. So I think in general, those are, I've also, I think one of the things that I learned being in the closet, probably my first 10 to 15 years, is knowing what society does to squash people. And so I think the spirit that I have is a proud spirit, but it came with some damage from how society treated us. And I think as a result, I have a greater sensitivity to those that not only are less fortunate, but also that society is not treated fairly.
And Trustee O'Brien.
Oh, thank you. And anyone can call me Stephanie. I prefer that. I've been on the board for 14 years here. I just the only answer I had here, because I thought we were getting into more detail later, was something you may not know by looking at me is I'm actually married to an Irish citizen. So like Wandine and her leadership, basically, I've been able to be very out and very proud. Had very similar experiences being in the closet to understand what people will do to put others down when they're threatened by that. And Wandine has been a great example for me. Very proud to have been able to live my life truly. And I have enormous support from my family and my friends and everything. And that makes me being alive and being present and being able to do something for others much more valuable. you're viable, actually.
Thanks so much for the introductions. It's just been a few minutes and we're learning so much. And kind of continuing on the same line, outside of your role on the board, what do you do professionally or used to do professionally, and what's something you like to do for fun?
Well, I'm a semi-retired biologist, and so I still engage in teaching and research just in different proportions than I used to, and I find that work very fun. But in addition, I love to grow tomatoes and eat them.
Passionate about the tomato. All right.
Are there certain kinds of tomatoes or all kinds?
Oh, yeah, I could go on for a long time.
Be careful. He was a
tomato. Different kinds. I mean, I like beans, yellow pear, Chadwick cherry, small ones.
Awesome.
And then we've got the nice bicolored ones, you know, Oaxaca, and some of those, the German giant who screwed them.
And they all taste different.
They all taste different.
Interesting.
Yeah. The,
right.
the yellow tomatoes and the orange tomatoes tend to taste a little sweeter than the red ones.
Yes. Interesting.
So.
I'll have you come over and help me with my tomatoes. I hate birds,
yeah.
What I'm saying.
So, yes, gardening in all ways is fun for me.
Good.
So, I run two consulting firms, wrapping one of them up now, hoping to retire in the next year or two. I've just turned 67, so I'm like, okay, it's time to play. Although I think most people know this, my mother just passed at 101. It's a good thing, Sally. It's a very good thing. She had a great life, but that means I got 35 more years to get out there and play. So I'm looking forward to that. But my focus has been on facilities and facilities consulting and helping public agencies spend taxpayers' dollars more wisely, you know, focusing on the investments that we're making with taxpayers' dollars. It's part of the reason I joined the board. I wanted to get into the board. Or onto this board. I had been on a K-8 board previously, but the College of Marin bond, I wanted to make sure the taxpayers knew that we were spending the money well, and so I would monitor that. And what I do for fun, cycling, reading, photography, I wouldn't say gardening after that, so yes, I'm not that good at it, but I did pick up the sourdough bug.
Oh, wow.
And I really enjoy doing that. It's so great to have.
I'm in that club too.
Are you? Oh, it's so much fun. I probably made several hundred loaves of bread, and I still don't know exactly what I'm doing. So, but it's fun. I enjoy doing it. It's very cathartic.
Did that sourdough bug start during the pandemic?
Almost towards the end. Both my sister and my niece really got into it, and then my sister, or actually my wife was going to, she knew I liked bread, so she was going to do it. She brought my sister over, they started doing it, I stepped in, and my wife said, my work here is done. And I've been making the bread ever since. But so just a couple years, but it's, you know, I've got an oven that proofs now, I've got all the toys, it's a lot of fun.
You could branch out to other kinds of bugs, because bugs
could.
Are great. Insects are most of the living things on Earth, so enjoy.
That's true.
I guess I was lucky that when I was 12, I realized I wanted to be a lawyer. So I went on that path, and I had a very successful career. I was proud of what I was able to do. And in 2019, I had the good fortune of being able to retire before the pandemic. But I
retired into the pandemic.
And my practice was 50-50% estate and trust administration, and the other was I represented homeowners associations. So my clients were boards, and that was a nice segue once I retired, and actually the few years leading up to that, I was a consultant with the League, the Community College League of California, and I trained a lot of boards and CEOs on how to work with board, and also how for boards to be the best board that they could be, because my work with the HOA boards, I became an expert witness and understand the standard of care for boards and their fiduciary duty. So it was a nice way to kind of bow out of the legal world. And now I take care of my partner of 41 years, has Alzheimer's, and she just recently moved into memory care. And I also have two other women in their mid to late Well, actually, late 80s and early 90s that I also take care of. So if you asked me 20 years ago, what would I be doing this time in my life, I would not have answered that. But I apparently have, I'm good at it. What I love to do is anything on the water. My favorite thing to do is sailing. I do a lot of sailing trips, and have been in very beautiful places in the world and feel very fortunate to have been able to sail there.
Yeah, there's such a wealth of experience, and we're only talking to three of the more than 30 members. So this is great. Speaking of the board, for those who might not be familiar, can you describe what the Board of Trustees does?
Wendy, you should take that.
Well, yeah, at some level, I just kind of said what I did as a consultant. But I think basically the board, I don't want to say hires and fires, but our main job is to hire the CEO and to make sure he or she is supported, that they're properly compensated, that they're properly evaluated. And when the time comes, either by choice or a difference of opinion, to be able to make a segue for them that they can walk out with their head high. I think that the success of the board is really the work that we can do together, the amount that we can collaborate. I've been on the board long enough to have served at times that I thought were the halcyon of the board and times that were certainly very difficult for us all, and me in particular. I think that the main thing the board needs to know is that we're a policy board. And for those of us, some of us are kind of policy wonks and enjoy it, and others probably hardly ever open up a chapter. But it really is the work of the board is to understand that we really delegate to the CEO. And part of the conversation we'll have in a few questions really relates to how do you get more engaged with the board and the board needing to maintain that direct relationship. Our only employee is the CEO. And so we need to respect that role. We need to honor it, but we also need to be available to hearing input from everyone in the community and within this district. I think generally the board has a fiduciary duty to make sure that there's money, that the facilities are well cared for. And I think we've been outstanding in that area. We are very fiscally prudent. We've had appropriate reserves. We can always have more because there could be problems that come up. But as a board, we work through that and we talk about it. And I think we have a high level understanding of what we're supposed to be doing and that we're certainly not supposed to get into the CEO's job. And when we have issues, we evaluate him in private so that, or her, so that they're able to do their job and have the respect of those that work with them. So I think that's.
The only thing I would add to that is that we are elected by the now by area within the county. It used to be recently we were elected by the entire county, but we are supposed to be the eyes and ears of the taxpayers. We're supposed to be representing their needs, which is a different perspective than an employee or a manager within the college. That separation for us says that, I like to use a very out of proportion hourglass. There's seven of us, there's one CEO, and then there's the whole institution. And we can't second guess what the CEO is, how the CEO is executing on our long-term vision. But the vision and the direction that we give through our policy, basically, we are known as a policy board, has to reflect best practices for the community because we are community supported. So no one really understands outside of our institution how this works, how you run a publicly funded educational institution. So they look for things that are obvious. How does the campus look? Do I have the classes I want? Is there, too much traffic or not enough parking, whatever it may be? They're not really looking at the bigger picture that we have to keep in mind. Wandine has been talking about for years, when that earthquake hits. Well, now it's when the fire hits, and it will. And given the fact that we are funded through the taxpayers' dollars, it's not through the state, it's not through tuition, it is through the taxpayers' dollars in County Marin, we have to be very fiscally prudent and make sure that should, the entire neighborhood of part of Novato burn down, those people will immediately want some tax relief, justifiably, which means our revenues will decline. We have to be able to respond to those kind of emergencies, just like we do at home, right? Everybody keeps 3 to 6 months of cash, hopefully, in reserve to pay mortgage, your basics, right? You know, hopefully not just sitting on a lot of cash. It's the idea is that is it enough to keep us moving? Like what just happened with SNAP, you know, there was a reserve, they chose not to use it, but we want to be able to support our institution and not have to fire people and cut off classes and do things if one of these natural disasters occurs.
The other thing I just add is that we consider the classified staff, because I consider classified staff to be like the backbone and foundation of the college. So we are really very happy to be here and talk with you. But also, sometimes I think the expression of what we do can get a little misunderstood. I think, Wanda, you're absolutely correct in saying we have one employee who's the president whom we directly supervise.
Right.
And so I think that's what we have to understand, that although we're responsible for the whole college and we consider all of you our college employees, each employee would have a specific supervisor within the college, and then those supervisors report to the president. So it's an interesting, as you say, maybe nobody really understands how it all works, but it's somewhat fluid. And I think that the other thing we'll probably get to a little later is what actually the classified employees provide, many things, of course, but also the classified employees represent an important store of information for the college. And so one thing that the board really appreciates a lot, because we can only make decisions that are as good as the information base we have. The information base is to a large extent supplied by the classified employees, and of course some of the faculty as well. I think that's an interesting thing that we always, and I think you're right, it's caused problems in the past in the college, and I think up and down the state. How do we really clarify these roles? And I think that maybe I would just say that we directly supervise the president, and then we value all of you as college employees within the whole system and how it's set.
Well said.
And I add one other thing too, is that we're the ambassadors to the community for the college. I mean, because there used to be, the subscription to newspapers was much greater. There was much more of a presence of individuals at different community events. And it's much, much more dissipated now. And it's very important for us to be out in the community, to go to dinners, to, it seems silly to get introduced, but it's like the college is there then. And to make sure that the college is at every table, especially when we're talking about economic forums, when we're talking about business connections, when we're talking about the environmental groups, that we really have been key players by being present. And that's an important part for us. It's not just what we do on campus, which we need to be going to campus-wide events, and we need to attend the convocation, and we know that we have that responsibility, but it's also a responsibility to be ambassadors to the larger community so that the college is always at the table.
And so in a way, we represent you. That's another part of our function.
For me, it's become a lot more clear. When I started as an employee here almost 10 years ago, it was just, the board has to approve, your hire. It's like, the board has a lot of power. That's sort of the reputation, and the limited kind of scope of our knowledge. The board needs to approve this, and then it's a policy, or then you get hired. So this is gives me, and I'm sure all of us, a clearer picture of the roles and the importance of the roles.
Well, and I think, Sally, if I may, one of the things that people may not understand is that basically, in essence, the buck stops with us. So we are taking a lot of responsibility on by making these approvals, hires, and if there's a lawsuit, if someone has a complaint, we are the ones who are approving. So we have to be very careful and make sure that we are doing things that are in the best interest of the institution and the community. It's not just rubber stamp by any means. One of the reasons, as Juan Dean said, is how important policies are, is that our policies have to define what our requirements are, not only under California law, but whatever locally we have to adhere to. But there's so many things we have to pay attention to. But if it were not for the classified staff and managers and things, and he was like, this is why we are doing this and this, because he worked at the college, the rest of us have not. We really need to make sure that we can trust the information that we're getting because of that exposure.
I think you mentioned board policy. I think this is something it's important to bring up. For those of you who are really not necessarily policy wonks, but I want to get into the details. On the college webpage, under the Board of Trustees, there is a box or a tab that's labeled Board Policies. And that is really the set of rules that governs how the entire college functions. And so go in there and you'll see that there are policies about just about everything you can imagine. And if there's something that you can't imagine, we don't have, well, let us know to make one. But the way that works is that whenever there's a new policy proposed or a change from existing policies proposed, then that goes through all of the shared governance system. So it goes through all the Senates. So Sally probably knows very well how important it is for the classified Senate to read all those policies and then approve them. Or suggest modifications before approving them. And then ultimately they come to the Board of Trustees and we approve them, and then they become active. So that's, I think, a great example of how the system works. That the buck does stop with us, but you have multiple opportunities to influence the buck as it's going along.
Yes.
So tell us about your current role as a board officer and what inspired you to become a board member.
So I'll start that one if you don't mind. So I'm currently the clerk. We as board officers, we are on a rotation system now, which I'm so grateful for, because rather than having to elect officers every year, which becomes highly political, gosh.
With the political unit.
Yes. I think it was about 10 years ago we decided to go on a rotation. We lined it out what the order would be. And that really takes a great deal of pressure off. We are here to serve the rest of the board. It's not a higher up. It's a task. The clerk is responsible for doing some signing of some documents and
reading resolutions,
taking roll during votes, that type of thing. But it's a lot of support to the other two roles. What inspired me to become a board member I spoke to earlier was about the local bond being implemented at the college, wanting to make sure that that was being done effectively. But I am a product of community college myself, and it was the best education I got, the best part of my education that I received. And I wanted to find a way to give back, and facilities was kind of my background, and accidentally. So I wanted to make sure I could do something that would help. And so that's why I decided to run, and I've won every election year. Stood for since.
Okay, now we have Leanne with the president. Okay, hi, so I'm vice president this year, and I've had the good fortune over my tenure to have served in all the positions multiple times. And I think the main thing the vice president does is support the president, that we're there to fill in if he or she can't be there, and also just to be support to the board as a whole, and be ready to step into the leadership position. As far as what inspired me, I was a political science major. I was always interested in politics. I was student body president in high school, so it was inevitable. But it was also because I was a product of the 60s, and that, I was at 13, I was at anti-war demonstrations in San Francisco, and very engaged in wanting what is now more referred to as equity, but recognizing that there was definitely haves and have-nots, and wanting to be able to make a difference in the community. And there was an opening on the board due to a death of one of the trustees, and I applied for it because I felt I could make a difference, and I was ready to serve, and I wanted to contribute in a way and in a place that I knew could bring about systemic change. And I think I'm proud of what we've been able to do. In particular, as I saw the College of Marin as a place where lives change, particularly for those that may not have had the privilege or good fortune of many others in Marin. So to me, it was a perfect fit, and I've obviously stayed a long time, and I enjoyed it.
What year are you on?
30th. Well, I'm in 29.
Goodness.
Yes, that's great. Well, I have to say, to back up a little bit, we're sort of the same age, and so in a way, we're product of the same environment in the late 60s, early 70s. So a lot of what you mentioned, Wendy, probably influenced me to become a teacher, to be able to advance those same progress towards the same goals. But as I approached retirement, I actually looked forward to maybe getting out and chasing mushrooms and squirrels and
tomatoes.
And those, a little more, but something happened. I really didn't want to be a trustee. I had always had, however, a deep interest in how in governance and, how, and particularly how academic institutions were governed. And so I became aware as I was a faculty member, and of course I served 23 as a faculty member. During that time, I was on many hiring committees. Many of you have probably participated in hiring committees as well, and you know how it goes. There are minimum qualifications. There are the job descriptions, the hiring screen down, the hiring interviews, and finally the hiring. And it occurred to me that there are no minimum qualifications for trustees. So theoretically, it would be possible for someone just to walk in off the street, having no interest in the college or no knowledge of the college. In fact, there wasn't a threat, I think last year or the year before, nationally, an ideologically based group threatened to take control of boards of trustees all over the, and school boards all over the United States. Fortunately, it didn't happen in Marin. But I began to think, well, you know, what would be a counterbalance to that? And it might be to have a person who's spent a lot of time as a classified employee or as a faculty member upon retirement to then transition to a trustee role. And I spent several years trying to convince people who had announced their retirement to do that. And remember, I didn't want to do it myself. But then when nobody took me up on the offer. And so I did have encouragement from one previous classified employee who had been on the board of trustees many, many years ago. But then when I announced my retirement, again, right as the pandemic was in full gear, or actually a little before the pandemic, then people started looking at me, reminding me, remember what you said? And so I said, fine, I will do that. And I found it to be a wonderful opportunity to continue to serve the college in a slightly different role, to grow into a different set of expectations and responsibilities. And as president now, I state very simply, I preside. And I think that would be a good thing for presidents all over the world to understand that that's the role of a president, to preside. And so what that means is that the board meetings, I run the meeting. And so I make sure that we follow the agenda. I make sure that people stay in order. Fortunately, it's been a wonderful board. That has not been a big problem. And then ensure that all the voices are being heard. And so I think that's been a very wonderful thing to be able to do with a wonderful group of people, and of course, and helping the board to fulfill its role.
So let's continue to demystify the Board of Trustees a little. What is something about serving as a trustee that most people might not realize?
You're one of seven. You are not there. Even though we run by area now, we are there to represent the entire community, and that we have a voice, absolutely. But once a decision has been made, then we need to honor it and we need to respect it. And I think that's something that a lot of people don't understand. As Paul was saying, you know, anyone can join the board, but if you think you're there to change everything or to have an outsized influence, it's not realistic. The state department or state organization that Wandeep was referencing really does a great deal to help trustees understand what their role is. So there's a lot of training that you can take, you don't have to take. It's called the Effective Trustee Program. And what you learn in that is you're one of seven, you have a lot of things you need to understand, but we are a policy board. We are not leading the organization, meaning running the organization. And that's a very difficult thing for some people to adapt to. And I will say, quite frankly, when Paul came, because Paul had come in front of the board, very, very outspoken on several occasions when Paul said that he run, I was nervous. I thought he's going to look at it from a myopic perspective, which we would normally do, right? It's like, this is what I know. He has done a remarkable job. I mean, just I'm so impressed with Paul stepping way back and looking at the institution as the whole, understanding what our role was and is, and how to run, how to function as a one person of a seven-member board. And right now, presiding, next year, it will not be. And that's, I don't know if that answered the question.
No, ditto about what you said about Paul too. I think the other thing you might not realize is the amount of time it takes. The preparation for the board meetings. I mean, I remember in the day we used to get the binder that some of you may still remember that we found, and we have to read through everything. And there was a finite amount of material that we would be given. And now that everything's electronic, it's like we get all these attachments. And sometimes I'm like, how much of this am I supposed to read?
Everything.
I know.
And memorize it.
Yeah, I know. And do all the links too while you're at it. I mean, so it's a lot, and we appreciate all that you put together, but be mindful of the audience that we do have a lot to read, and we like it succinctly. So that's one element of the time in preparing for the board meetings, because nothing bothers me more than to hear a trustee ask a question that was in the material we were presented before the meeting. It's a waste of everyone's time, and time is important. But also, I think the part about what I mentioned, being ambassadors, being in the community, making sure that we're present there, making sure we're present at, you know, not only commencement and nurses pinning, but the events throughout the year, the EOPS holiday, all the learning communities, opportunities that we can be there to provide a connection to the community as well. So that it's time. It takes a lot more time than I think people realize.
Yeah, I would say that going further along that line, demystifying what we do, you can't, all of you can access the board agenda. Okay. It's probably going to come out tomorrow.
And all the attachments.
So
unless it's confidential because of legal reasons.
Right. But essentially, to make a long story short, we have work to do. Same way you have work to do. So each one has a job to do. And our jobs this weekend will be to go through all that information. So I would say I usually allot about 6 hours per weekend to go through all that. And then I usually let it sit for a while. So if the board pack comes out on Friday or Thursday afternoon, then I can actually get a head start on Friday. And I like to read as much as I can. I look forward to it. I mean, I think that's a great way of approaching your job, right? Say, I have all this work to do. It's so wonderful. Let's get into it. Let's do it. You know, and so I will sit down at my computer, and I'll have a wonderful, spacious morning that I will dedicate to the board work, and I'll read all those documents, and then I will, of course, let that sit for a while because I have to think about them. Right? It's not just reading them; it's thinking about them, and then seeing how all the background information, how all the attachments fit. You know, support the agenda, provide us insight into the agenda, and then I'll be prepared to certainly fulfill my role at the meeting. But if there's any question I have, then again, thinking about how the board works, I will ask the president. I'll send him an email maybe on Monday or something. You know, this I just have this question, and he's very good responding. Oh, that refers to something, or maybe there's something else we could add there. Whatever. Anyway, I think that those are probably the two parts of our job. The formal part, which is going through all that material and being present fully at the board meetings and doing our jobs as trustees in terms of voting and approving all that as efficient as we can, effective as we can. And then the informal part, which is being the sort of the face of the college and sort of the face of the Board of Trustees and within the college, the face of the college outside in all of the other events that happen in Marin County. So I would say, and again, I've said this to people who are considering running for the board, I would say it's probably about a quarter-time job. So I would say probably about 10 hours a month. I mean, that's what I would say is a rough, I don't know.
10 hours a month, that's more than 10 hours a
month. Well,
yeah. Yeah, I'd say more. It depends, especially when you talk about the events. No,
not 10 hours a month.
That would be
10 hours a week. That's right. That's right. That's what I'm thinking. So that quarter-time job would be 10 hours a week.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
That's what happens when you get retired.
Yeah, it's like, I don't have to think these numbers anymore.
I'm just hearing, you know, the Paul's enthusiasm and just the, you know, I didn't think about, you know, Board of Trustees being, or trustee members being ambassadors in the community. So there's a lot that happens outside of the board meetings or the preparation for the board meeting. So, I mean, I appreciate a lot more all the work that's done, you know, before you come to a meeting. And so I appreciate all of you.
Thank you.
So, Paul, in our pre-podcast meeting, you talked about the board being an important element of democracy. Could you elaborate on why the College Marin Board is important to democracy?
Yeah, so in addition to having, you know, this function, we're here today on this campus and we're part of the college community, right? But we are also a local government. Okay, we're a local government board. So the Marin Community College District is a district that's recognized as a local government body. And so then we are elected by the people of Marin to represent them. And this is really important because it's at the local level that individuals have the potential to make the greatest impact. It's just a question of numbers. So if you are going to vote for the president of the United States, you're one of what, 100 million or how many people are going to vote? You vote for a trustee, you're one of a few thousand. And so that's just a numbers thing. And then of course, given that we're all living here in the same county as the people who elect us live in, then we can have more personal contact. And there's a saying that all politics ultimately are local. So I do believe that if people do not participate in local government, whether it's the college board or the city councils or these other local elections, they're probably much less likely to be effective participants at the statewide level and at the national level. And so that's why I say it's really important to think about us as local government and as elected officials. And then, of course, I think it's come up before, we represent the college and the people of Marin, and we represent the people of Marin in the college. Right? So.
And just if I can piggyback on that, you know, as I mentioned earlier, the money that funds the college is all local money. And so we are probably the most representative of Marin County's investment in our community. There are lots of other boards and things like that, but we span the entire, we are the, you know, leading educational, public leading educational institution in the County of Marin. And the impact that we have is so profound. And I don't think people really realize that. If I'm not mistaken, it's either, is it a 3-to-1 return for every dollar invested? I think it's a $3 return.
At least two possible.
So that means, you know, we bring people to a point where they can earn a higher income, where they can, you know, do more to contribute to the success of the county. And that matters to everyone. I don't think people really stop and think about that. It's like, oh, I don't have kids, or I'm not, you know, no longer in education, or I don't need education. What we are doing is helping to create and sustain our community with taxpayers' funds. And that is the most democratic representation, or most significant representation of democracy that I think there is. It's local control. It's all decisions are being made. We are not run by the state, which is really important. Yes, there are some guidelines that are sort of the bare minimum, but we can go above and beyond that, and we do. That's an important thing to remember. So from a democratic perspective, if you're going to vote, which we hope everyone votes, and every election, this one, I think, makes the most impact on your lives directly.
And it's had real impact this year, when we've seen so many educational institutions across the United States being attacked and really suffering. We have suffered less because of our strong roots in this community and because the community has supported us so strongly.
That's very true. Okay, and then one added thing is, having done stuff nationally as well as statewide with community colleges, I have interacted to some degree with institutions that have appointed trustees. Mm-hmm. And that's a very different thing. And you would not have, not now some of you may think it's not a good thing to have a board member for 30 years, but I do think there's some value in the longevity and as long as that trustee knows his or her role. But the appointment is very political, and it's for a very short period of time. And it's usually appointments by a governor. And so there's a lot of turnover. There's no real historical memory. And yet, at the same token, there's an ability when we have the smaller regional elections to elect disruptors. And so there's also the part about democracy is it's kind of messy.
It's
they say,
it's
like
messy.
Making sausage or whatever you want to compare it to. There's elements that come into play that may not be in the best interest of the institution, but your hope is that you get people that really care about the institution. And I think nothing as more enjoyable, if that's the right word, to go out into the community during a campaign. And I can think of many instances going like to West Marin and getting a group of women women that all gather just to ask questions, or to go out to any other school district that's having a night with their trustees. I would always go, because it was countywide at the time, I'd go to them and I'd hand out documents and say, you know, vote for me too, because if you care about education, care about higher education in the county, there's an engagement that you get through democracy that I think I'm very fortunate to have been that close to it, and I'm honored to have been able to serve.
One thing I'd like to point out is another real good example of the democratic input or impact is that we, as a community college district, had been elected countywide for many, many years. And then the decision was made to go by area. So right now we have someone living in seven different areas of the county. We have a very diverse county, not as diverse as other counties in certain ways, but West Marin is not Novato, is not Sausalito, et cetera, et cetera. We have someone living in those communities who really knows what the day-to-day life is and what the experiences are. My area is West Marin, but it's also West Novato. So because Novato is so large, we have basically two representatives, but West Novato is very different than South Novato and North Novato as far as population and demographics and needs. So that's an important thing that we are doing, is we are really representative now. I'm a mixed mind on the benefits of whether or not you're by area or by county, but we have done, because of the people we are and the board that we are, we have done a very good job of equally representing those areas with and the whole county at the same time. Where many times what will happen is people get very myopic about their own area, and my area matters, but I don't care what's happening over here or here. This is what I need. Well, if you support me here, I'll support you. You get this, you know, glad handing and dealing, which I'm not a fan of. But we don't have that here because we have a really solid board. Juan Dean has been on the board for 30 years, which I'm of the mindset, it's like, let's not overstay our welcome, but we should know individually when it's time to move on. We should know, it's like, I've done good work here, rather than just staying on so you can say I'm an elected official, or, you know, there aren't a whole lot of financial benefits to this job. And as Paul said, we probably spend, let's just say, 40 or 50 hours a month. I think we're paid $400. So, it, you know, we're not doing it for the money, and certainly not doing it for the prestige. It's for the impact.
That's amazing. Thank you so much for sharing. I'm just really enjoying our conversation, learning a lot. Very
informative. We could probably go on forever.
Yeah. So next question is, how can classified employees, since our audience today are classified employees, share ideas or feedback with the board effectively?
Well, they said I would start that one. I think the main area is the participatory governance. I mean, that's key. 1725 was a bill that was before I came on the board, so I think it's like 35 years old now. And it was prescient in terms of making sure that there was a level of participation by every employee within the systems. And it's had its challenges, certainly, and there have been times that while I've been on the board that the board didn't do as well a job in trying to make sure that we heard from every group. We did have a period of time that we had to do some district-wide training so that we all understood each other and understood the roles that we were to play. But I think in general, the board is available to listen. We have, as I started about talking about the only employee that we have being the CEO and not wanting to undermine him or her in their position. Obviously, if we are too available and we're hearing complaints from individual classified members, we can listen. We have to be very careful about how we respond, because anything that we say or any facial expression could be perceived or interpreted incorrectly. And then, you know, the gossip mill will speed on and it'll be, oh, Trustee O'Brien said blah, 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 or I can tell she didn't like X, Y, or Z. And so that in turn can undermine the CEO. And yet I want to hear it. I also want to hear if there are issues, and I want you to understand and respect that I also have a role to play by listening, but not commenting, but also wanting to make sure that you know within the system of participatory governance itself, what your method is to get the most effective information to the Board of Trustees. And I think that's really, that's kind of what I think is what we have to do.
I think one of the most effective ways actually is doing public comment at the board, because it's all seven members are there. When we receive public comment, we typically are not allowed to respond if it's not an agendized item. But we'd love to hear people's input. It's really great when people from the organization come and say, you may not be aware that this is having this impact. Following the participatory governance approach, there's a meaning behind it. There's a reason behind it. But if someone still feels frustrated, isolating a trustee off to try to get support on something isn't going to change how we can approach things. So actually coming to the board and saying, this is an issue you may not be aware of. Paul used to do this a lot. This is an issue you may not be aware of the impact of this. And so we want to bring that to your attention. And sometimes it comes out of the blue. Sometimes we kind of understand already. But I think that's really the most effective way, personally.
And what I like too is, I mean, both Sally and I see Monica's here. While I've been on the board, I've watched you grow and the roles that you play in leading the Senate and knowing of your first meeting. And, I don't want to say that the two of you remember being very nervous, but I got a perception that you might have been a little nervous. Here I'm coming to the board, and we want to be welcoming. We want you to know we want to hear from you. The Senate is important to us. Your role in the participatory governance process is critical. And it's wonderful to see you grow in that by the last meeting, when you say, okay, I'm off and I'm passing this on to someone else. I personally have felt the growth within those two examples, Monica and Sally. And I think it's good for you as an individuals too.
I don't think we want to be seen as people who are not approachable by any means. And yet at the same time, we should be sort of treated as a group of people rather than individuals. Coming in front of us should not be intimidating, should not be something is someone is nervous to do. It's important that people feel that sense of freedom.
And I would just add to that all the classified employees, of course, can participate through the classified Senate.
Yep.
So I don't know how it works, but I guess at a Senate meeting, some classified employee could talk about something, and then you could convey that as the classified Senate president to the rest of the board, right?
It's
stepping the leadership.
I mean, I appreciate earlier comments that we made. You're one of seven members to remind us and how not to approach.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, I'm going to single a board member out and make them hear all my email. So I appreciate sharing not just how we can effectively lead participatory governance, classified Senate, other committees, but also that each board member is one of seven.
And I just let people know, if you, for example, as an individual classified employee, feel the need to contact me personally through email, through the college email, right? But that's fine if you want to do that. But what I usually do was then I pass that on to the president.
Yes.
And so then I say, okay, I received this, and I pass it on to let him have the first response.
Mm-hmm.
And then later what happens is that every month, we have different meetings before the board meeting. So there's one breakfast meeting between the president of the college and the president of the board of trustees. There's a board officers meeting. These are all in preparation for the general board meeting each month. And so we have an opportunity to discuss among ourselves things that may have come out. But we really, as I think you said, Stephanie, that the important thing is information. If you have information, you feel it needs to get out and it's not getting out, use any or all the techniques we've mentioned and make sure the information gets out.
And I really appreciate you highlighting the fact that usually when people want to communicate with the board, they will communicate through our current chair. But we do not have I don't want to use the word authority, but we have an agreement that we will not respond directly to someone's concerns or complaints. That's the CEO's job. That is their job. We can bring it to their attention, but reaching out directly, people have our emails, reaching out directly, it is fine, but this is what's going to happen with it. Because as one of seven, we can't be making decisions or trying to encourage other. We actually have a rule, there's a rule that disallows us from speaking to other. So the three of us could have a conversation about something that's going to come in front of the board, but we can't talk to anyone else, and we can't try to influence each other. And even three is, it's like, yeah, we really shouldn't be doing that. But when you go to a majority, there's something called serial. What's it?
So that's the state Brown Act.
That's the state Brown Act
that ensures transparency in all public meetings. So if, for example, a classified staff member were to say, oh, I could just email all seven members and get feedback from all of them, we would be violating the law if we responded as individuals. There are seven of us. That would be a discussion that would be outside a public meeting. And we're not supposed to have discussions outside public.
Thank you. So,
good feedback. Very good to know. Can you share a success or story that made you feel especially proud to be part of the college?
Show me here all day. I'll make it brief. Okay, I think there's two. One is enrollment priorities. And that to me was something near and dear to my heart. When I came on the board, the people who were able to sign up for classes were those with the most credits. And so you have a highly educated community in Marin County. There were a lot of people with advanced degrees. I think for at least one, for a period of time, we had the most advanced degrees in the country. And so we have a lot of lifelong learners, which is great. But it also had an impact that those that had not gone to college were not able to get the classes they wanted. And it really was a disadvantage that had a disproportionate impact on those that perhaps had the least voice. And so the part that to me that made a huge difference at the College of Marin was we flipped it. And that was not something the board initiated, but it was something the board supported. And it certainly has made a difference in the enrollment. It has made a difference in the average age of the students that are attending College of Marin. When I came on the board, the average age was 34.
Wow.
So that goes to show you what has changed in that period of time. The other thing that I'm really proud of, and it took all of seven of many different variations throughout the 20 years. But when I came on the board, the facilities at the college were abysmal. We were at the bottom 10% of the state. Those that might remember Olney Hall, all of the tiles in the ceiling were stained from the roof leaks. I mean, it was despicable.
It was embarrassing.
It was embarrassing. And it was like, what were we saying to the community? We want you to come take classes here, but we're not going to take care of our facilities. And we did not have the money. There was no question about it. It was before we were community supported or basic aid, and there was no money. And we were doing classes at skilled nursing facilities where we had captive audiences that we could count for enrollment. I mean, it was whatever was done to just grab every possible student because that was the only way we were funded. And it was extremely difficult. It was difficult to award any type of reasonable compensation. I mean, the whole thing was extremely difficult so that we couldn't fix anything either. I started going to statewide conferences and I hear all these people talking about their bonds and what they were doing to improve their facilities. And I looked at Marin County and at that point, every school district in the county had passed a bond except for the college. And so I brought it to the board, why aren't we doing a bond? And unfortunately at the time, we had a board member who was a quote unquote political consultant. And she was certain, as she told us many times, that there was no way that the board would be able to pass a countywide bond, that there just wasn't the support for it, and we just had to stop talking about it. And so, you know, I let another couple of years go by and kept bringing it up. And then finally, I just said, you know, tell me that when we fail, but not before we try. And when then we started doing surveys, we hired a political consultant, we realized that under fire, College of Marin was the next highest priority in the county. People had a touch point there. Over 85% of the people that were polled had either themselves or someone in their household had taken a class at College of Marin. And when we got those statistics, we knew that we actually had the potential to pass a bond. But we then were very strategic in how we approached the first bond, because we wanted to prove, we told the public, we have a greater need than we're asking for you right now, but we want to be able to do these critical projects. And at the time, the ground was bubbling at IBC because the gas pipes in the ground were leaking so much that in the rain, they would bubble. And here we had all the trees that we have out here. The reality was the conditions were so poor that we had to go out and we had to get the bond. We got huge support. We exceeded what we needed to have. We needed 55%. And as I recall, we got 63%. We were 63 or 64%. It was almost the threshold that we could have done with two thirds. And then we came back to the public later and said, we promised you we had more projects to do. And here's the rest of the projects. And we again had a huge majority of support over what we needed in the 55%. So to me, looking at both campuses now, looking at what we've been able to do in enrollment, it was critical.
I would thank you for that. And I just add one additional bit. And that's that it's been very important that we've gone from an attitude of why can't we do something to how can we do something. And so we've moved to this idea of excellence, and that's led us into the centennial celebration and our fundraising and all that. So that's been wonderful.
Yeah, I would just quickly add to I think proudest moment is seeing our outreach and our engagement with our high school organizations and what we've been able to do to change the perspective or perception of the college. My son is 26, and when he was in high school, people were dismissing the College of Marin as a viable step before going to four-year university. And I made him a deal that, you know, if he went to 2 years of College of Marin, I would pay for him to go anywhere he could get in, knowing full well he wouldn't get into Harvard, so it was going to be okay. But I made him this deal, and he was very reluctant. And because what people were saying, we have done such a great job in outreach and really connecting students with the reality of the success of our institution. And to see that change over time, over the last 14 years, has just been so wonderful for me, because more and more families are recognizing this is a great place for my 18-year-old to go to school, not just, and then bringing down that average age from 34, I think we're at 26 now, 27, which is remarkable. Across the state, I think it's about 25, which is great, but it's a very different demographic, and I'm very, very proud of that.
Awesome. So as you know, we have a diverse group of classified professionals who are at different points in their career. And what is your advice for classified professionals who want to make an impact at Calm and beyond?
Yes, that's a wonderful question. I would say, first of all, just be confident. Remember that every day that you're working in your job, you're getting better through your daily experience. And a lot of times we forget that, because sometimes you got to do things over and over again. You think, well, boy, I'm on the grind. But actually, we're all getting better as we continue to work in our jobs. And then you can take advantage of professional development opportunities so to learn more skills. And then you might even think of taking on additional roles, moving into other job classifications, or even, you know, perhaps when you retire, run for the Board of Trustees. But also, I think that it's important to think inside the box and outside the box. So we're sort of all in boxes while we're working, and we have to think of, now this is where I really think that the college has turned the corner in trying to liberate the creative abilities of all of the college employees, faculty and staff, to think about excellence. And so while we're doing our everyday jobs within the box, we think about what could be, you know, what if, imagine, right? And so that's wonderful. And then I'd say, you know, be creative, be congenial, be patient and persistent as you work as part of a team. Because as we say on the Board of Trustees, we're all doing things together as a team of seven. And so you can also do the same thing as classified employees, work with other employees, both classified staff and faculty, and then make change happen.
And don't forget why we're doing what we're doing. The people's lives, we are impacting people's lives. And the classified, as Paul said, is the backbone of this institution. And the impact that your organization, your group of people have, don't forget that. Don't forget that. We don't forget it by any means. And I know the students don't either, so.
Okay.
No, I didn't. That's good. I saw there were some questions in the chat too, so I don't know.
We're not going to be.
We don't have time for that.
So to wrap up, and then we will close out pretty soon. What's one thing you want classified employees to remember from this wonderful, informative? I'm just so excited for everything I learned. To remember from this conversation.
What you do?
Okay. I think that we're human. That we're just like you. We have an interest in the college. We have an interest in the student success. We have an interest in you enjoying your job and you doing the best that you can do. That we want to be available. We want to be the conduit that we talked about. We want to make sure the institution not only survives, but thrives. And that we really are dedicated. I think that we may seem aloof to you, and I'm sorry if that's the case, but the reality is we do have a role to play. We do maintain a certain level of distance, but we're accessible, and we care about what you think, and we respect Sally's role. We respect the Senate's role. We respect the faculty's role. We defer to them on academic issues. I mean, I think the main thing is that we know we have a role to play. We do our best staying within the lane that we're supposed to be, but we are here for the success of all of us and for you to know that we all have the same goal.
That's it. Thank you.
Yes, and I would say maybe come to a Board of Trustees meeting, you know, at some time.
In person
or virtually, yeah. Yeah, just to see what we
do. Nice to see you today. Thank you. No, everyone has said good.
Yeah,
wonderful. Thank you very much.
Thank
it's
you.
Been a
Thank
real
you.
Pleasure.
Well, really want to appreciate Dean, Paul, and Stephanie for just all the time and effort, you know, to prepare for today. And also want to give a special shout out to Briar and Mickey and Dr. Eldridge for also all their support in making this happen. And we are going, I'm going to pass it back to Briar for some closing remarks.
Well, thank you all so much for this wonderful discussion today. And I have to say, initially, I was just blown away by the amount of preparation that you put into this meeting today. But now having to, you know, now that I've had a chance to get to know you all a little bit better, it's not surprising at all. This seems very on par for all of you, and it's so appreciated. I really learned so much today. And I think one of my biggest takeaways was really that perspective shift, which is really the whole point of this podcast, right? So I do attend the board meetings from time to time, but I'm really feeling so inspired to attend more meetings and really listen to what's going on. This has really, really been so enlightening, and the juggling and the thought process that goes on behind the scene is just fascinating and really inspiring. And I also had never really thought about the broader impact that the board has on our community. And so thank you so much for highlighting all of those things. And thank you so much for all of the work that you do and for being with us here today. It's really, really meaningful.
Thank you.
For all of
You're
us.
Welcome. Thank you for what you do too.
Yeah, thank you.
We're
thank
all
you.
Part of the team.
Teamwork makes a dream work.
That's
I would also just like to take a moment to remind folks about our Seas Candy fundraiser. A percentage of these proceeds go directly back to support Classified Senate. And so this helps us to continue to provide these types of events and these types of programs. So please check your emails for information about the Seas Candy fundraiser. And with that, I would just like to again thank Paul, Juan, Dean, and Stephanie. Thank you so much. We really appreciate you taking your time to be here. And thank you to everyone who attended today with us live. And as a reminder, we will have a recorded session as well up on our webpage, on the Classified Senate webpage. Keep in mind that the Classified Senate serves as your collective voice. And so we hope that you speak up and you speak loud and you speak often. And we look forward to sharing your voice with the board during our Classified Senate reports. So stay safe out there today. It's rainy. And again, we just appreciate you all so much and taking the time to be here.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye.
college.